Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
too many things we found. That's Dar Williams singing with Pete Seeger and David Burns, the Solartopia song. We're back for another hour in the Green Power and Wellness Show. We got a wonderful, magnificent guest back with us for another time because he's such a great guest, and we also have incredible circumstances here to discuss. Alan Minsky, you with us?
I am, Harvey Wasserman. I'm right here, and I'm looking forward to the hour.
Yeah. And we'll be joined at some point by Bob Fetrakis from here. And I am in Ohio right now. We've just had a major nuclear disaster of tremendous political importance. Thankfully, it's not yet a meltdown, but we're expecting one momentarily. And when Bob comes on, we'll talk about that. Alan Minsky, you are a major figure in the Bernie Sanders campaign, and I'd be remiss if we didn't start with this. I can barely contain my language, but maybe you'll do better than me. Hillary Clinton has come out, and and attacked Bernie Sanders in terms really kind of right out of high school. I mean, she says, quote, nobody likes him. I mean, give me a break. He got 13 million votes in the primaries in 2016. Maybe that's why nobody in Hillary's circle likes him. Before I start downgrading into obscenities, which we don't use, by the way, we could theoretically use them on PRM, but the show is picked up by stations that can't use them. So tell us, as a Bernie principal, what your reaction is to Hillary Clinton's latest attack, and then we'll talk about the impeachment, and then we'll go into when Bob comes on, we'll talk about the nuclear situation in Ohio, and then we'll devote the rest of the hour to what is too often neglected on the left, which is sports. But Alan, your take on Hillary Clinton's schoolyard put-downs of Bernie here.
Well, first, I do have to clarify that, PDA, Progressive Democrats of America, we do feel that we're the people who brought you Bernie Sanders. Well, of course, Bernie Sanders brings you Bernie Sanders. But we're the organization that, before any other organization nationally, called upon Bernie Sanders to run for president. And we started that in 2013, of course, as Progressive Democrats of America. For a moment, emphasis there on Democrats, we were encouraging him very clearly not to run as an independent, but to run as a Democrat. Of course, Bernie had always been an independent. We are, however, an independent expenditure pack. As such, we do not coordinate with the campaign, so I'm not an official Bernie Sanders surrogate. I want to be clear about that. And we, of course, endorsed Bernie Sanders for president in 2016 after we successfully drafted him to run. We've endorsed him again in this cycle. We had that endorsement in place quite a ways back last year, very shortly after Bernie announced that he would run again. And we actually do not endorse unless our supporters around the country support a candidate at a 60% level. So as much as Bernie is beloved within the PDA world, with so many candidates, we wondered if he'd pass that threshold again this time, but he did on the first ballot, and there you have it. So we've endorsed Bernie Sanders. Now, Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. What can be said? First of all, I probably, at this hour, especially among the general population, but I think even among Democrats, and I don't mean to be overly snarky here, but I think the Bernie Sanders campaign, I, as a head of a pack that endorsed Bernie Sanders, want to say thank you to Hillary Clinton. I don't think she could do anything more to boost our popularity than to say what she said about Bernie Sanders. it so transparently, you know, signifies that the, well, should we call it the Democratic Party establishment? The Clinton wing of the Democratic Party absolutely does not want to see Bernie Sanders get the nomination for president. And why is that? Well, there are many, many, many reasons. And we can talk about the paid political consultancy class, which the entire Sanders movement has basically no use for, and they really should have marginal use value in an honest democracy where America to become that, which is the goal, of course, of the Bernie Sanders movement. But I think really at its core, it's even just, and I you know, I'm a, you know, grassroots American progressive person of the left. Don't want to sound too Marxist-y here, but, you know, this is straight-up class interest. I mean, the people who bankrolled the Democratic Party from the time of the Clinton's ascendancy through to the present, they view Bernie Sanders as a class enemy. Bernie Sanders is an advocate for working-class people, for the rebuilding of a solidly and truly middle-class society here in the United States of America. That means when you go out and you do a day's labor and you work 5 days a week, you deserve to have ample vacation time, and you deserve to earn a living wage for yourself and basically for your family. I mean, this is all about building up the wages of working people, the liberty they have from escaping the constraints of overwork, of overpriced housing, overpriced health care to their benefit. And, of course, what does that do? That runs counter to the way our economy and society has been organized since the time of Ronald Reagan and was continued through the Clinton era, and all the major money backers of the Clintonite wing of the Democratic Party are basically the beneficiaries of the current economic system, which is basically sinking the middle class, making access to a middle-class society, a prosperous middle-class society, which has strong public services and health care, education, strong infrastructure, et cetera. You know, just a better society for all of us, make that unavailable to the working class. And, of course, in no way has there been any rectification of the structural racism that divides the working class in American society over these past 40 years and from the political elites. And Bernie Sanders, of course, stands for that as well. So, you know, her contempt is welcome.
Yes, Alan Minsky, you're the executive director of Progressive Democrats of America, speaking to us from California on Hillary Clinton's schoolyard attack on Bernie Sanders. Bob Petrakis, have you joined us? No, still no Bob. Okay, so Alan, the Clinton, I refer to them as corporate Democrats, by the way. I think that makes it a lot easier and clearer. And Hillary claims to not be running for president again. I think she's really got the itch, you know, but boy, was she a horrible candidate. And, of course, another presidential Democrat who won her election, as did Al Gore in 2000, and John Kerry in 2004, and then walked away. Gore and Kerry bequeathing us George W. Bush. We didn't think at the time that it could get worse than George W. Bush, but in came Donald Trump, thanks to Hillary Clinton. And, you know, Hillary, of course, made it all clear when she referred to us and the whole universe of people that didn't vote for her as deplorables. I'm sure that you and I, you know, you should print up buttons and bumper stickers that say, "I am a deplorables for Bernie." I mean, that would be pretty much say it all, you know. Polls, Bernie's polls continue to strengthen. You know, he's stuck in the Congress for this impeachment hearing, and he has not been able to go out to the grassroots in Iowa, which would be, although he's sitting there with Elizabeth Warren and Amy Klobuchar, and who's the other senator that's in the race?
Bennett, Michael Bennett. Is the head of the New York Times editorial board. And yet his brother, of course, you know, he has almost as much a chance as Amy Klobuchar of getting the nomination.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to say, you know, I watched the first day of the stuff on the procedures in the impeachment. Obviously, everybody knows that this Senate will not vote to remove Donald Trump. And it, technically, it's no longer really an impeachment hearing. I mean, the impeachment hearing is over, and he has been impeached. And impeachment is really just an indictment. And this is a removal trial. And, you know, I think for all intents and purposes, the Democrats have done a pretty good job. And, you know, people are now starting to talk about Adam Schiff for president, which is inevitable. I mean, the one advantage he has over Trump, among others, of course, but the one he does clearly have is that he is sane and he is able to construct a complete sentence and even present a coherent legal case. I actually met him in Santa Monica not long ago and shook his hand, and I strongly suggested that he start referring to Trump as Fredo. He claimed to not know what I was talking about, but obviously I just saw interspersed with my viewing of the impeachment last night was the local or whoever it had was carrying The Godfather. So whenever they broke from the impeachment, I would flip over and watch The Godfather, which was pretty cool and pretty relevant, actually, very appropriate to watch Michael Corleone taking over the mob from his old man. And I have to say
stick with the Godfather reference, how is Trump Fredo? Fredo is the guy who eventually gets it out on the lake, right?
Yes, Fredo was the younger brother. No, actually, he was the older brother. He was the middle brother. James Caan played Sonny Corleone, who was mm-hmm. the older brother, oldest brother, and who was next in line to be the Godfather. But he was a hothead, and he stupidly was dragged in to a trap, and they put about 400 bullets in him at an abandoned toll booth somewhere right. going in from Long Island. And then Fredo right. was next in line. But Fredo had been sick as a child, they showed it, and he was basically stupid. And so his father passed him over and made Michael, Al Pacino, the next Godfather. Fredo didn't take it very well. And
who had showed an independent streak as a young man.
He turned on the family and actually betrayed Michael to Meyer Lansky. And Michael discovered that and had to have him, by the mafia code, shot. Now, that's not going to happen, we hope, to the president. It's illegal and unwise and not appropriate to advocate assassinating anybody. But Fredo was a traitor. And he was also basically, you know, very weak and very stupid. And we refer to Trump as Fredo because his godfather is Vladimir Putin. He has other royalties, and he's also very weak. So real fans of The Godfather know what you're talking about when you refer to Donald Trump as Fredo. And I just got a raft of counter-argument hosting Lila Garrett's Connect the Dots show from someone who didn't think that it was appropriate to talk about the Russian involvement in the 2016 election, you know, as if it's some kind of conspiracy theory. But people who have followed Donald Trump's career know full well that he's been owned by Vladimir Putin since 1999 when Putin took over the Russian mob.
Right, and the person who I think took issue with you is the absolutely brilliant and fantastic anti-war organizer and activist David Swanson, an author.
Right.
Just one of the great you know, voices of common sense when it comes to the realities of American militarism.
Is Alan breaking up, or is it just my phone here?
I think I got pretty good signal here, Harvey. Can you hear me?
Okay, yeah, keep going.
Yeah, and so David Swanson took issue with that. And, you know, my particular angle on that is Yes, of course, it's very important. But the central issues that allowed Donald Trump to get close to winning the presidency in the first place were his exploitation of the economic imbalances in the society, the fact that the political establishments of both parties were basically fine with a domestic order in which the average person, really the whole idea of American social mobility and the and it was downward, actually, is what was happening for most people, that this was something that has become very clear to the public. And so what we at PDA are all about is about building up a different kind of politics, a politics which is not going to allow anybody like Trump or anybody who has any associations with Vladimir Putin in the way that Trump does get close to the White House again by transforming American politics by, advocating for a revival of Democratic participation and for the election of representatives and the president as the representative of the entire country, whose interests are the interests of working class people, middle class people, poor people, to lift them out of poverty and to house the homeless. So, certainly what's going on there is very important, because there's no doubt that the constitutional republic is with someone like Donald Trump in place, the whole structure of the governmental system is under siege. He really deserves to be impeached on so many fronts. But clearly he has broken the laws here enough in the case that they're litigating now in front of a stacked court. And I think we all have to take the measure of it, take it in, understand it for what it is, and protect ourselves and our society from this happening again. And right now, since it does seem very clear that the Republicans, this is just the most ridiculous kangaroo show trial imaginable. And of course, there's many, many, many other instances in history. We've always believed that, especially on a high-profile case like this, that you could actually have the body that is ruling on a trial to not allow for there to be relevant testimony in front of the whole world. This is what has to be. We have to defeat this. We have to protect ourselves from the Republican Party, from the Donald Trumps of the world. But to do that, we can no longer go back to supporting and bringing forward candidates who do not have the best interests of the average person in the society central, and are basically going to preserve a system in which everybody now understands that all the labor, all the work that everybody does in the society goes to the benefit of the already rich or the very few Jeff Bezoses who break through and join the billionaire class. So that's my take on impeachment. Even I fold it right back into everything we're trying to do around the country to transform the government to the election of left progressives.
Well, you're 100% right. You're with Alan Minsky here, waiting up Bob Fitrakis. Bob, are you with us? No, I guess Bob's still. Bob probably got the time wrong. But Alan, let me back up just a little bit. I insist on making the point of Trump's ties to Russia. They are significant. I've had just, long, and I think that we ignore them at our peril. I mean, David gave a brilliant litany of the instances where Trump appears to have acted counter to the interests of the Russians and of what Vladimir Putin allegedly wanted. But there's kabuki going on there. And I just want to and as someone who's involved in election protection issues, it's important to understand that there's very little doubt that the Russians were intent on hacking our voter system. Now, the voter system itself is an issue. And it is clear that whether or not they succeeded, they did try in 2016 and will try again in 2020 to impact the outcome of the American election. I mean, no matter who the Democrats run, the Russians are still going to want, as will some other foreign groups, they'll want Trump in there. And there may be some foreign countries that want whoever the Democratic nominee will be in there. That's possible. The point is, and I have to tell you that I'm actually grateful for the Russiagate situation. Because, Bob Fitrakis and I broke most of the stories of the theft of the Ohio election in 2004. And I have to say that if we weren't here, and if Bob wasn't a political scientist who could figure this stuff out. I'm just a historian. I would have never known that they stole the 2004 election, had an option for Bob, been for Bob, and then we collaborated and wrote these stories. And we wrote these stories about how 2004 was stolen, and we laid it out 100 different ways what they did. The attacks that we got were not from the Republicans. They didn't care. They didn't seem to care that we showed how they stole the election. And there were no Russians involved in this one, by the way. I mean, this was a far cry from any foreign involvement. This was just homegrown Karl Rove, George W. Bush, J. Kenneth Blackwell, Jim Crow stuff. You know, we were attacked not by the Republicans, but by the Democrats and by the left press. And we were attacked in The Nation, the Progressive, I mean, you name it. Not the Progressive, no. Sorry, the Progressive stood by us, Progressive Magazine. But Mother Jones ran an article against us. And, you know, it was quite amazing to be attacked by the progressive left for pointing out that a presidential election was stolen. And I can't resist, and I don't know if Bob is on the line or not, but a lot of the information that we were getting about, and Alan, you got to pay attention to this, what's coming up in 2020. A lot of the information we were getting about how the Republicans stole the election in 2004 came from a Democratic Party insider. And he would tell Bob at night all the stuff, all the shenanigans that were being conducted by the Republicans. But when he was called about it in the daytime by the progressive media as a Democratic, you know, functionary, he would deny it. It was shocking. But the Democratic Party officially did not want, and I'm not going to begin to psychoanalyze this, they did not want the exposure of how they got completely taken by the Republicans in both 2000, which Greg Palast reported on, in 2004. And I will tell you that the Russians had nothing to do with the theft of the 2000 or the 2004 election. But in 2016, they were right in there. Now, what kind of impact they had, I don't know. But the reason I'm glad that the Russians have come up in this, and I believe we have to understand Donald Trump being owned by Putin, and that's a whole other discussion, but we've made the points many times on this show. The reason I'm glad that the Russiagate came up was because, once again, nobody was paying attention to us. And the only way that CNN and Rachel Maddow and all those other people in the in the corporate media would deal with the issue of election theft was if the Russians were involved. Now, I don't doubt that they were involved. I don't think they tipped the balance. But
okay, I have two finish your thought, but I have two major issues to reply to, both elections and Russia. So I do want to not be misunderstood for what I said before. So finish your thought.
Yeah, well,
I really do want to bounce back.
You know, okay. I disagree with David's peak about, you know, Russiagate. And I understand people getting tired of hearing it from the CNN and MSNBC crew. I mean, it gets boring and it gets irrelevant. And for all their discussion about the Russian involvement in the 2016 election, they never talked about Trump's involvement in the Russian mafia. It's amazing. They want this narrow line of the Russians this and the Russians that, and they never mentioned the word organized crime and the fact that, you know, Trump was bought in the 80s and 90s by Russian mobsters who now report to Vladimir Putin. And that's how Trump became owned by the Russian mob. So, and he still is, and the Russians will still try and crack our electoral system, and we got to pay attention to it. And it's, you know, and so, okay, it's enough already with the Russians, but on the other hand, there they are, and at least it prompted the cable crew to pay some attention to the fact that our elections can be stolen and have been stolen. All right, Alan, so jump in on that.
Okay, first of all, on Vladimir Putin, a little bit in his relationship with Donald Trump. Yeah, obviously the dealings have been very shady. Donald Trump's whole professional career has been extremely shady. He's a grifter. He's a guy who comes out of a racist family that was building housing. He moved into luxury housing. He's always looking for tax breaks and incentives. He cheats his contractors, and he went bust. After he went bust, he kept going around the world looking for capital. He'd go to, you know, he was getting money from Canadian banks for a while, and they realized he wanted nothing to do with him all the while. The Wall Street investors knew he was a bad game. They didn't want anything to do with him. And eventually, yeah, runs into some of the most corrupt money in the world, which is that which is held by the people who stripped the assets of the Soviet Union and became the Russian oligarchs. And there's a whole shadow banking system around the world, and he's on the shadier side of the shadow banking system, because don't forget, you're a less distrusted oligarch amongst the Wall Street set. They have their shadow banking system as well, you know, and it is not people who they reject from Donald Trump. So much money has been offshored by the oligarchs around the world, the very wealthy people around the world. That's basically kept away from tax bases that could be used to fund, again, social services that are necessary for people across the entire world. And so much of the balance of that money comes from the United States. Vladimir Putin is an autocrat, he is an anti-democrat, and he is a model for the kind of leadership that the right wing wants to see across the world, including in the United States. And as such, Donald Trump, of course, wants to be just that kind of leader in the United States. This is, he obviously has personal grudges with the sort of central grouping of American oligarchs who view him as from, you know, the wrong side of the train tracks. He's from Queens. He's not enough to the manor born for them. But he loathes them, and they loathe him personally, and I think he's a joke and everything, and this is somewhat of the base of his popular support across the American population, is the sense they have that he has legitimate contempt for this oligarchic class of, you know, the funders of the museums and et cetera, right? And by the way, museums are great. I don't mean to disparage museums. But Putin, yes, he's also an incredibly savvy international player. He's very dangerous for those reasons, because he does play his hand pretty strongly across international relations. His exact relationship to the amount and degree of the impact he had on the results of the 26th election, as you said, it's open. Has there been, an on-again, off-again bromance between Putin and Trump that more or less on balance seems to be very much on-again more than it's off-again? Yeah, I see that. But again, Putin is the highest profile of the global anti-democratic authoritarian autocrat. This is a model right now, an ascendant model for governance across the world, and everything that we do has to be against that model. We have to revive democracy through active participation and through the promotion of a political economics that's to the benefit of the average person and not primarily to this corrupt oligarchic class. Again, Russia being a model there. So that's that. Now, on terms of election and election machines and the possibility of election theft, I think, as you know, every bit as much as I do, PDA has been on the front line of this battle from the beginning. One of our great champions is the brilliant actor Mary Kennedy, Mimi Kennedy, a star of the hit TV show right now, Mom, and so many other great performances across her career. She's a recurring character on one of the most popular sitcoms in American television history, Friends. And Mimi Kennedy, and just a great actress on stage and in film as well, she's really one of the nation's leading advocates having paper ballots, accountability, true accountability in American elections, no tricks possible across the board. And PDA has been on the front line of that battle, and we continue to be so. Mimi is, of course, one of our advisory board. She's previously the chair of our advisory board. She remains on our advisory board, and she's one of the central players in PDA's activism and the person who anchors right up to this hour, as there's a ton of consternation right now in the largest county in the country, L.A. County, with the introduction of new electronic machines and which were presented as being, you know, a vast improvement in solving all of these problems. But as people have looked more closely at what these machines are here in L.A. County, the worry has not been erased. So this is a frontline issue across the country. We have to have the people have faith in democracy, full 100% certifiable faith that their vote will be counted. We need that, of course. We need universal registration. We need to get all of this purging of the voter rolls by the GOP ended. And on all of those fronts, PDA is fighting right on the front lines. So I did have to say that, of course, is the second point. And the first point on Putin, as you can see, I sort of maybe split the difference between you and Swanson, probably closer to you even than David, but I don't know. I thought David makes some good points. I do think this has been overstated. Of course, one of the great gripes that people like Aaron Maté, David Swanson, Jimmy Dore have about this is that it's an excuse of the Democratic establishment so that they don't have to take responsibility or even look at their politics as to why they've been rejected by the American public. And I think that's a component, too. So I do see there's validity in that point. And I do not shy away from the idea that Vladimir Putin is himself a dangerous autocrat. American foreign policy should always be for human rights and for doing whatever we can in our relationship with countries to advocate for democracy, real democracy. And this is not what's going on in Russia, and his influence, including in American politics, is certainly nefarious.
Yes, indeed. And we're finally, that's Alan Minsky, Executive Director of Progressive Democrats of America. We're finally joined by Bob Fitrakis. Bob, I gave you the wrong time, sorry, but thanks for chiming in. Are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, the great Bob Fitrakis, publisher of the Columbus Free Press, a professor of political science at Columbus State Community College, and an attorney who has been involved in exactly what we're talking about, election theft, and working with the great Joe Stein will be my guest next week, by the way, to talk further about this. So we will deal with Jill and Bob's work with Jill on election theft next week in greater detail. Bob, I did tell the story of how in 2004 there was a Democratic operative who was feeding you the information on how the Republicans were stealing the election in the nighttime, and in the daytime was denying it to the reporters that were calling up and asking for confirmation on all that. I do want to talk, and we're getting...
And some of our friends in other publications didn't seem to understand the nature of Ohio politics.
No.
I mean, he was one of the largest cities in Ohio, their county chair.
Right. It doesn't get any more Ohio politics, Ohio Democratic Party politics, to have a guy calling you at night and telling you how the Republicans are stealing elections, and then denying it in the daytime when the media calls. I mean, that's the epitome of Ohio Democratic politics. And I want to talk to you real quickly, and then we'll get into my promise of discussing sports, because some major things have happened. Most importantly, in our world, the denial by the Olympic Committee of anyone to make any political statements. I mean, come on, guys. And then we can talk about the upcoming Super Bowl, but which will not be attended by my own Green Bay Packers, of which I am a part owner. But Bob Fitrakis, can you tell us what happened today in Ohio? I mean, it's a sad day for nuclear power, and it's a sad day for American democracy.
Well, again, this came down yesterday. The group fighting to overturn Ohio's nuclear power plant bailouts, $1 billion worth, withdrew their lawsuit, had it dismissed. And I think even more importantly, one of the key reasons they had it dismissed was because of the tactics of Generation Now, this sort of anonymous group that no one really knows who they are. But as you recall, Harvey, they hired people to track and stalk the petition circulators, which the Ohioans against corporate bailout felt was harassment. You know, they in many cases, they would have three of these kind of blocker stalkers trying to keep people from signing the petition to put it on the ballot.
It was just outright storm. I almost dropped the F-bomb here, which I'm not allowed to do on this show, but it was just outright fascism. That's the other F-bomb. I mean, these guys were stormtroopers. They came in, they physically assaulted signature gatherers, they surrounded signature gatherers, three of these so-called blockers would establish surround signature gatherers and prevent them from getting their petitions filled out. They also bought petitions from signature gatherers and tore them up, and they bribed signature gatherers to not gather. I mean, this is a line that hasn't been crossed in the use of the referendum in this state and certainly in this country. I've never heard of this. So let's make this clear. In order to prevent the people of Ohio from voting on a referendum that would have overturned a billion-dollar bailout passed by a corrupt legislature, the nuclear industry sent in thugs, basically, to physically assault people gathering signatures, and they have thereby, now that the people have pulled out, the anti-nuclear people have pulled out, they have now successfully killed a referendum process in the state of Ohio. Bob, I mean, does it get any more serious than that?
Well, Gene Pierce, Ohioans Against Corporate Bailout, their spokesman, said, and I quote here, "It really set a low standard for factual debate and made our margin of error zero for getting this petition drive done," when he spoke out against their tactics. And remember also, they ran one of the great propaganda campaigns of all time. I mean, not even under McCarthyism did you get the kind of propaganda that the Chinese communists were taking over. If we didn't support the billion-dollar bailout of a decrepit industry, the communists were taking over the power grids of Ohio.
God, that was right out of Monty Python. One of whose founders died yesterday. I mean, I read his biography. He was a terrific guy.
Harvey, and I hate to interrupt you, but you know, Harvey, I was in a film directed by Terry Jones. I know him personally. He was just a beautiful, beautiful man. Brilliant, hilarious,
yeah.
Of course, insightful, thoughtful, kind, really fun to be with and fun to work with. I was very proud to appear in the film Boom Bus Boom with him. He scripted me and directed me, and I know his son, and it was such a sad day for me yesterday.
Yeah, he was, I watched some filmed interviews with him. He was really terrific, and I was a big Monty Python fan, as I'm sure many of our listeners, so our condolences to the family, and thank you, Terry, for a million laughs. I mean, he played the guy who walked into the restaurant. I don't want to describe it on air. Which movie was that, Alan? You know, he walks into the restaurant.
That was the Meaning of Life. The scene was just one more thin wafer mint. I gotta say, Harvey, and speaking about Terry just for a second, I want to ask Harvey Wasserman, not on this show, but let's plant this seed, and maybe I can join you back on this show to have this discussion. What, you are really one of the great, radical, just fantastic authors and activists of your generation, a generation that collectively was a visionary generation. What the heck has happened, Harvey? You know, they say Bernie Sanders goes up against Joe Biden right now, above 65. Have you seen what those poll numbers are? You know what? Take the general population, likely voters, Bernie Sanders versus Donald Trump, above 65. You know, I think some communication with your peers, your generation, that generation, the one that put the word generation on the map, that has to happen, guys. Bob and Harvey, you guys are brilliant. I don't know how old Bob is, but I'm guessing you might have a few years on me.
Bob,
I know, Harvey, you're a baby boomer. What's happened,
Bob,
Harvey? So let's take that up on another show, you know.
We will, absolutely. And I got my history book coming out. It's almost done, The People's Spiral of U.S. History, and I talk about that. But I am grateful, as I'm sure Bob is, for the millennial, and you are, for the millennials coming up. I mean, my feeling about this, and Bob and I have discussed this, is that we are baby boomers. And actually, I have to admit it, by way of disclosure, technically, I'm not a baby boomer. I was born the last day of 1945 at 4:36 p.m., in Boston, and the baby boom started.
The war had ended by then, Harvey.
I know, but
you're right. You would have been conceived while the war was still going on. There you go. You got it.
The baby boom, technically, for demographic purposes, and Bob's a political scientist and knows this, it begins January 1st, 1946. So I am 7 hours and 24 minutes shy of the baby boom. But, you know, we looked, and Bob and I were pretty much on the picket lines at the same time, we looked at two major issues. We looked at the empire and the culture. And we basically transformed the culture. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about that. There's a lot of things that were held back, but, you know, so the culture is totally different than it was in 19, whenever, when we came of age. So we won that one, but we certainly haven't won the empire, right, Bob?
Yeah, yeah. I'm the perfect baby boomer. I was born in 1955, right in between 46 and 64. And again, we did win the counterculture won and it continues to win, on the issue of marijuana, music, openness and tolerance and sexuality. But again, right, Harvey, the key question, can you be an empire abroad and a democracy at home?
No. We can't be half free, half empire, as Abraham Lincoln might have said.
A point of redemption, in 2016, Sanders had a spectacular political commercial with Simon and Garfunkel's America behind it, just in advance of the Iowa caucuses. Just the past few days, he's released an equally beautiful political advertisement. The backing track and really the front star of the commercial is a cover of Bob Dylan's The Times They Are Changing. So a point of redemption there. But still, y'all, you got to work on your people there. It's not looking pretty right now.
Well, but you know, Bernie Sanders' presence as a force in a campaign and then like as a presidential candidate is quite astounding. I mean, he is an old new leftist. He's not a baby boomer, as you know. He's from the previous, like Abby Hoffman and Tom Hayden. I mean, he was their contemporaries. And but he is clearly from the new left of the 1960s, and like so many of us, he hasn't changed. My politics have not changed since 1966, and neither have his, and neither have Bob's, or yours for that matter, Alan. So, you know, let's give some credit. If you'd have said that there is no more certifiable new leftist than Bernie Sanders, and if you'd have said that a guy with our politics would be a serious candidate for president, that's a stretch, you know. We have had a black guy. We were close to having a woman, although clearly it was the wrong woman. And but Bernie is certainly the correct new leftist, when you think, Bob?
No, absolutely. And again, I met Bernie in 1980 at what was then called the Socialist Scholars Conference, and I was one of the national founders of DSA, which happened a few years later, but he was always there attacking, then DSOC, later DSA, for being too liberal, for wasting a lot of their energy, not putting forth more progressive and radical candidates.
Yeah, and here he is, Alan, a significant, I don't have to tell you. And if you look at the electoral map, I can't speak for the over 65s. You know, I'm 74 now. But if you look at the map, there's a map out there showing the electoral outcome in the Electoral College if it had been only people between 18 and 29. And, I mean, he swept the country among people who are now under 33. So, the Hillary Clintons of the world are terrified, obviously. And I don't know how we're going to push them out of the way here, but something's got to happen. The Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, and I'm writing about this right now, the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, which does the doomsday clock, has just put the survivability of the human race at under 2 minutes. It is the most dangerous time in all of human history, even since 1947, when they first started the clock at the peak of the Cold War. And, you know, it was once, in 1991, it was down to 17 minutes. But we are now under 2 minutes. They put it at 100 seconds. And the litany of threats to the human race is, you know, but they're too polite to do it, but you got to start with having an unhinged madman in the White House who has no comprehension of anything except where his next paycheck's going to come from at public expense. So I don't know, Alan. I think it's a little unfair to blame us boomers. When were you born, for God's sake?
Oh, I'm not blaming your boomers. I agree with everything that Bob said about the transformations of culture and society that occurred. But there is the raw fact of the present and the voting. And all I really want to do is spark people who maybe will help to talk among people from their own generation to have Harvey and Bob dig into that. And though Bob is actually just short of, I suppose, 65.
Exactly. 64
right now, currently. And so some extra dialogue seems to be necessary.
Well, absolutely. But, it's important we take credit for what we've accomplished. I mean, bad as his politics are, we do have a gay guy who's a serious candidate for president. That could never have happened 20 years ago.
No, never. I don't mean to be doing any generational bashing.
Oh, you should.
So much.
You should.
Literature and music in your generation.
I just reread Martin Luther King stuff, and he said correctly, and people asked me, what happened to the country? And I refer to a single word, which is Vietnam. And Vietnam destroyed this country. And Martin Luther King said that, if there was ever a destruction of the American soul, you'd have to start with the word Vietnam. I mean, that war destroyed us. From the murder of Kennedy on, it's gone haywire. Just completely koyaanisqatsi, life out of balance. And we're all trying to figure out now how we're going to, what's terrifying about the bulletin of atomic scientists taking the two-minute car, getting us under the two-minute warning, is the length of things that they're scared of. It used to be they were just scared of nuclear war, but they start with the infiltration of military decision-making by artificial intelligence. That's what they list as the main threat to the future of human race. Artificial intelligence making military decisions. And then, they've had to add climate change and all the other stuff. And, we are in pretty rough shape, I got to say. So let's segue now. I did promise you, Alan, and Bob, we would talk about sports. And I think it's important that people, who listen to a show like this, and I did it on my KPFK show, which you got me, Alan, the California Zootopia show, that the Olympic Committee has now banned political protests. And, lots of luck with that. Bob, do you want to comment on that, then, Alan?
Oh, well, I'm still waiting for the Truth Committee on John Carlos and Tommy Smith. Remember, that occurred right before the sort of secret slaughter in Mexico City of Mexican students, the Institutional Revolutionary Party. So, I can't believe they'd be making a second error because, I think Carlos and Smith should be on the Olympic Committee.
Absolutely. I have to say that for the Olympic Committee has managed to be even dumber and more reactionary than the NFL, which is almost impossible to conceive. Alan, what do you think?
Well, I certainly think, Bob, that was a great take on it. And, of course, I think those two guys belong on a U.S. postage stamp. So maybe that's something for the next administration to think about, too, or the Postmaster General. But the I mean, of course, my word, global warming, obviously Olympic athletes skew at the age of competitive athletes in their, teens and 20s and into their 30s, and a generation very conscious of global warming. The idea that they're going to ban political expression on that issue or any other issues is, of course, utterly outrageous. And, again, all the more reason we got to fight to protect free speech here, there, and everywhere.
Yeah, and to top it off, the idea that they've got these games in Japan and that they're actually doing events, I think some baseball games, in Fukushima province, it's outrageous. And people have to understand that nuclear radiation does not come down in some nice, gentle, uniform blanket. So you can take radioactive readings a mile from Fukushima and you might not get anything, but you walk over 100 yards and it'll be off the scale. And, the Japanese government is doing this in very specifically to whitewash the dangers of the Fukushima accident, which is still pouring radiation into the ocean. It's outrageous. So too, the upcoming Super Bowl, you know, my beloved Packers got crushed. Alan, you want to handicap what's going to happen there?
Well, you know, I mean, as for the game on the field, these are two very explosive offenses. You know, the 49ers have in very strong defense. I suppose I would say that the, as much as the 49ers have an excellent offense, driven by an exceptional running game, with a solid quarterback who makes very few mistakes but isn't, you know, going to rack up a lot of passing yards, I would tip the offense to the Chiefs, but I would tip the defense to the 49ers, so it looks like a very close contest, so very hard to predict going in. And, of course, Patrick Mahomes, the quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs, is just incredibly spectacular. It's a very exciting offense to watch. Again, hard to predict. I suppose my heart is a little bit more with the Chiefs in this one just because it's been 50 years since they've been in the Super Bowl. They've been a competitive team for the large balance of the intervening 50 years. And the 49ers, on the other hand, of course, are, if they were to win the Super Bowl, they would join the Steelers and the Patriots for the most Super Bowl wins. So they sort of bottom out and then snap back up quickly, though they had that incredible run from the Bill Walsh years through the Jerry Rice and Steve Young years where into Terrell Owens, where for about a 20-year stretch, it was a 20-year stretch that has only really been matched by the New England Patriots, which, you know, Harvey's from New England. I have a sort of like contrarian, sort of hateful, spiteful drive to support the Patriots in recent years, but I can feel the rest of the country just thanking the lucky stars that there's no Belichick and Brady this time in the Super Bowl.
Bob?
Well, as a Detroit Lion fan...
my condolences.
You know, I watched them both, and I don't know whether it was just an exceptional game, but what the 49ers did to the Packers seemed almost impossible to me. And I'll be rooting for the Chiefs because of the, you know, 50-year question, but I think if I had to bet, I'd pick the Packers. I mean, the Lions. I'd pick the 49ers.
Right. We'll give it to the Lions this year. And, you know, the politics of the situation, the one moment the politics jumped up for me was when Kenny Smith, who's been a big supporter of Colin Kaepernick, caught a touchdown pass for the Titans. I was happy to see that happen. And I, in part, I'll be rooting for the Chiefs for the because they do have a black quarterback. And, you know, we had all those years of telling us that a black man could not be a quarterback. And I did see the game where Doug Sanders threw five touchdown passes in the Super Bowl for a team that whose name we don't mention. And it is such a statement on the NFL that that team still has that racist name. I am advocating, as I'm sure you and Bob and Alan both are, that all these sports teams be taken over by communities that they live in. I'm sick and tired of these teams being bounced around. I mean, L.A. has both the Clippers and the Chiefs. I mean, the Chargers, it's outrageous. No business being there. They just moved. The Raiders had a huge fan base in Oakland to Las Vegas. Ridiculous. They moved the Sonics to Oklahoma. I mean, please. Alan, what do you say to that?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I was actually involved in a little bit of a movement here to try to have the Los Angeles Dodgers be publicly owned before they were bought by the group that bought them, and you know, with some kind of billionaires at the base of the group that ended up purchasing them. And the Dodgers are so beloved in Southern California, and of course the Green Bay Packers are the only major sports team in the United States that are owned by their fan base, which has tremendous benefits for the civic environment of Green Bay, Wisconsin, and of course across Europe. Really the most successful sports franchises in the world, most notably FC Barcelona, because they really have a very, very democratic structure, are owned by the fans of Barcelona, as is Bayern Munich, the great dynastic German soccer team. So this is very much a model that can exist, and you bet that FC Barcelona and Bayern Munich, just like the Green Bay Packers, make much more of a positive civic contribution. And guess what? Very unlikely that their fans are going to move the team.
Good. And Bob, we've had that issue rise here in Columbus with the soccer team. And by the way, Alan, I just heard from other sources, you've never told me that you were a great soccer player in your youth. So maybe you'll come here and play for the Crew, which they're trying to move. Bob, tell us about that one.
Well, you know, there was a huge investment in land that needed infrastructure. It wasn't going to cost us anything. And then it was going to cost us $50 million in infrastructure and then $100 million. So it's now up to $140 million, and they'll be using various tax instruments and base and abatements and money for blighted neighborhoods to build up the non-blighted arena district.
Okay, buddy. Listen, we'll have to have both of you guys back. Thanks, Bob Petrakis in Columbus, Alan Minsky in Southern California. We'll be back next week with Jill Stein on the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. Thank you, guys.
Solartopia.